The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Obviously, Brooklyn has a lot of talent, but at the end of the day, you know, there's only one ball. You got to play defense, too, so.
I got two chains. You heard him, Ben Simmons, talking a little trash, or I'm at least going to make it seem that way. Both teams tied 37-17. They face off tonight. Nets, Sixers, let's get it. Max Kellerman back in the building. Good to see you, sir. Stephen A., I'm Molly Karam-Rose. And, fellas, that's where we're starting. One ball, and you got to play defense, too. Stephen A., how should KD and Kyrie respond to Simmons for that comment tonight?
Well, number one, they should respond like they customarily do to anybody else. They should drop buckets. This is what they do. KD, when healthy, is averaging 30 a game. Kyrie, averaging 28 a game. I mean, we know what kind of showstoppers they are and what they bring to the table offensively. But I tell you, if they really, really want to get back at Ben Simmons, you know what you do? You back the hell up off of him and dare him to shoot jump shots. That's how you could really, really get back at him, to be quite honest with you. Because that's the only weakness that I see Ben Simmons has in this game. I think that this dude is a jump shot away from being LeBron James 2.0. I just think he's that lethal. His passing ability, his basketball IQ, his ball handling ability, his rebounding ability. And I think that he is a large candidate, a top two candidate for NBA Defensive Player of the Year. I just think that Ben Simmons is that elite defensively. So listen, I don't think that, you know, he's believing in himself and his teammates and giving Philadelphians an opportunity to really, really look at the 76ers and say they got a chance against this team. They can do some things against this Brooklyn Nets team. So I don't think that, you know, Ben Simmons was being grotesquely disrespectful or anything like that. He's believing in himself and his teammates. But this is basketball. And basketball, even though it's a team sport, you do find yourself in situations where you encounter, you have one-on-one encounters potentially. So there may be times when Kyrie is face-to-face against Ben Simmons and he can handle that. There may be times when KD is face-to-face, directly one-up against Ben Simmons and they can handle their business in that regard and it would be entertaining. But ultimately, how do you get back at Ben Simmons for saying what he said? 2 points. You drop buckets, and then when he has the ball, you back up 10 feet away from him and dare him to shoot a jump shot, because that's not what he does. And that's the difference between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets as far as I'm concerned.
Look, to me, I think you're right about that, Stephen A., but to me, the question is about Philadelphia. And pardon my voice, I got the Pfizer shot a couple days ago, and the side effect for me somehow is I lost my voice, Stephen A., but it's coming back. To me, the issue is the pressure is on Philadelphia. It's on Ben Simmons and the 76ers. Remember, before the Nets got James Harden, I wasn't picking him to come out of the East, but I did say this. When I saw Kevin Durant, the way he came back from the Achilles, when he was playing early in the season, I thought, the Sixers really need Ben Simmons to be the best version of himself on defense, because there's no stopping Kevin Durant. But the best defensive matchup in the world is Ben Simmons. That's as good as you can do. You can't do any better than that. And by the way, I think he is the defensive player of the year. I don't think anyone else is really in the conversation, to be honest. Maybe Embiid was before he got hurt. Look, the reason the pressure is on Philadelphia right now is because the Nets don't have James Harden. Because the Nets are playing the second of back-to-back on the road. Because the Sixers are supposed to win this game. If you're fully loaded, you got Embiid and he's balling, you got Simmons, you got your whole crew with you. And the other team, the main challenge in the East, along with the Bucks, doesn't have the guy I keep saying is the most important player on the team. James Harden rolled out of bed, showed up in Brooklyn looking a hot mess, and was a walking triple-double with 30 points in wins. In wins. When he's not on the team, they are not the same team. So no James Harden, second of back-to-back on the road, and you're talking? Oh, Stephen A., Simmons especially, but the Sixers got to show up and win.
Well, for me personally, number one, I think you're wrong about there not being anybody else in the conversation. I'd put Ben Simmons one myself as defensive player of the year, but I'd throw Draymond Green and Rudy Gobert in there. When you look at the Utah Jazz and the way they've played defense and they've been top five all season long, I got to give Rudy Gobert credit because you don't get much on the interior going up against the Utah Jazz. And in the case of Draymond Green and the Golden State Warriors, even though they're two games under 500, they're fourth defensively in terms of what they allow from two-point range. And you know that has a lot to do with Draymond Green because he's consistently going up against he's consistently defending against guys that are bigger than him. So he's undersized at that forward spot, but yet he does what he does. So I definitely think he's a candidate as well. Having said that, getting back to Ben Simmons, I think when you look at Ben Simmons, this is a guy, and I got an interesting stat for you. Max, do you know he's averaging over 10 shots a game this year? Do you know this is his fourth year in the league, and he went from 12.3 to 12.2 to 11 point something last year, like 11.3, and now he's down to 10. We talk about this guy and his star potential. He's actually shooting the ball less each year than he did the year before. And that's by and large because of A, the pieces that are around him, but B, more importantly, because he's not a threat from the perimeter. This guy, if Ben Simmons, who we all love and we all think is terrific, wants to be a true superstar, which he has the potential to be, you have got to get a perimeter shot. And I would just say this, as elite as he is defensively, and I respect where the hell he's coming from, he does not have any business talking about how there's just one basketball and somebody's got to play defense when, guess what? The Brooklyn Nets are the one team in the NBA that can give up 120 points a night and still win basketball games on a regular because that's how lethal they are offensively. And when you are so limited in terms of your perimeter shooting ability, because that's the only thing that I think he's limited in, how are you going to talk about these two snipers and Kyrie and Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets? That's just not wise. And knowing that James Harden eventually is coming back, I just don't think that was the wisest thing for him to do.
I want to address a couple things you said. Number one, I'm glad you shouted out Draymond Green. He always deserves it. Gobert, Ben Simmons addressed that. He said, talk about Rudy Gobert. I don't see him guarding anybody. Like, because I just dropped 40 on them. I thought I couldn't score. Right? Like, Simmons addressed that. I think Simmons is the best defensive
Embiid
player
ate
in the
him
world.
Up early in the
I'm
season,
glad you shouted
remember.
Out.
Embiid ate him up earlier in the season. But I'm just saying, Embiid ate up early in the season. No. I'm just saying that, but schematically, what Quinn Snyder does, he anchors that defense. You got to give credit where credit is due to Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, for sure. He's a very valuable defensive player. Yeah. I think when your eyeballs are on Ben Simmons this year, you're like, that's the defensive player of the year. You talk about he can't shoot. Stephen A., you're absolutely right. If he could shoot, he's LeBron James. But you can still not be LeBron James and be a great player. Is he an MVP player? No. No, because of the shooting, that's true too. But do you know what he has done since he's come in the league? Ben Simmons has created more open looks from three for his teammates than any player in the NBA since he's come in the league. So what did Daryl Morey do in the offseason? Brought in some shooters, brought in high percentage scorers, not volume scorers, but guys who make the most of it when you give them the ball, either in the paint, high percentage, or shoot well from outside. So Simmons, as a brilliant basketball orchestrator, gets those open dudes the ball and they take the shots. Not one person, but a bunch of them, which is one of the reason that the Sixers have been a powerhouse this year. You and I both know, if it's not obvious yet. The way Harden and Kyrie coexisted in the backcourt, the way KD looked when he came back initially from the injury, if those dudes in Brooklyn are healthy, ain't nothing the Sixers can do.
Well, that's what I told you from day one.
That said, if you want to exploit the Sixers somehow, maybe it's good to have a player like Embiid. A little soft in the middle, who's going to really stop Embiid? So they do present certain matchup problems, and they should win this game.
Let's move on here. Nets have lost four of the last five to the Sixers, guys. Both teams tied for first in the East again. That game, Nets at Sixers, 7 Eastern tonight, right here on ESPN. Can't wait. Let's move on to a friend of the show who had something to say. Mavs owner Mark Cuban saying NBA play-in tournaments are an enormous mistake. Cuban, who had approved the proposal for a play-in tournament as a member of the league's board of governors on Tuesday, told our Tim McMahon that in hindsight, this approach was an enormous mistake because of the NBA's compressed 72-game schedule this season. On Monday, Mavs star Luka Doncic also expressed his dislike for the play-in tournament. Stephen A., what do you think? Is it fair to call it an enormous mistake due to our unusual circumstances this season?
I believe so. And I believe that Mark Cuban said it precisely the way that it is. The key words here are in hindsight. In hindsight, as you reflect on the season that has transpired before us, I don't think it was the right way to go. You can't blame the NBA or anybody else for taking chances in light of COVID-19 and how it's compromised so many different things throughout the world, including the world of sports. But in hindsight, as you reflect on it, I agree with Mark Cuban, not only with what he said about that, but how he articulated it even further when he highlighted that it should have just went 1-20. Let's take the top 20 teams in the NBA, let them all in the playoffs for this 1 year and go with it from there, as opposed to, you know, just having a play-in between us, you know, seeds 7, 8, 9, and 10. Because to me, you're devaluing the regular season to some degree, because if you're a 7th or 8th seeded team and your record is a top 18 as a top 8 team in your conference, all of a sudden you're the last two seeds and you have to battle just to be in with a 9th and a 10th seed, but then what are you saying there? I don't think that that's the message that you should want to send. If anything, you expand the participants in the postseason with two additional teams from each conference. Make it a solid top 20, you know, 1-20 and go from there. I totally agree with Mark Cuban when he says that. That way you're all in. You play your playoff game, do a best 2 or 3 instead of a best 4. A best 3 or 5 instead of a best 4 of 7. Handle it that way and go from there. I think that would have been the best way to go.
I totally disagree with Mark Cuban, and I totally disagree with you. First of all, to me, Mark Cuban, who's a friend of the show and you know, one of the more popular owners in the NBA, sounds like he's making excuses, sounds like sour grapes, sounds like he's scared they fall out, you know, that they can't climb out of a play-in position. But that's the whole point of the play-in games, the play-in tournament, whatever, mini tournament. Stephen A., I'm surprised at you. You always talk about people like me devaluing the regular season. You know why we do that? Because it used to be over 50% of the teams in the league make the playoffs. If you want 10 teams in there now out of 15 in each conference, now fully 2/3 of the teams actually get to play a playoff series. That further devalues the regular season. What I'm saying is this. What the play-in tournament does is take teams like the Mavericks, a 7 seed, and say, what, you think you can rest as a 7 seed? Well, so when did this start happening? You're not a 1st or a 2nd seed. What, you're resting for the playoffs? No. It gives teams, lower echelon playoff teams, something to play for. Let's climb out of the 7 slot, right? Let's get to 6. Teams 5 and 6 don't want to fall to 7 and 8. Meantime, 9 and 10 still have a shot. They still have a shot. It turns it into like an NCAA tournament type thing. Hey, can we get hot on one night and play our way in? If 7 and 8 are crying about that, oh, what about that? Well, you know, win that game. Or don't wind up 7 and 8. It incentivizes better play. It disincentivizes tanking. I like it a lot. And the Mavericks are a snake bit this year. By COVID early, they're not the team I thought they'd be by now. I still think that they can surprise a lot of people come playoff time, but you can't sit here and make excuses now. You signed up for it because on paper it was a good idea, and it's turning out that way.
Well, I disagree with you. And the reason why I disagree with you is because of COVID-19. I think that this calls for an exception. I'm certainly not advocating that this is something that should be, an indelible mark on the NBA, whereas you keep it in place and leave it at that. I'm not implying that. I'm saying that this season calls for compromise. This season has compromised a lot of people. It's compromised their health. It's compromised their availability. It's compromised a lot of different things. And so when you take that into consideration, along with the fact that the season was cut by 10 games, it started about 2 months later than it usually does, et cetera, et cetera. These are different times. And then you were moving ahead with a level of unpredictability because, remember, we were supposed to originally, under the previous administration, Max, you recall this better than most, where we were supposed to have about 3 million folks vaccinated, and it was a tenth of that. And then, you know, obviously, it got off to a slow start, and, you know, we were incredibly alarmed. And then a new administration comes in, and more people are getting vaccinated, but still in all, you know, it's one of those situations where you didn't know how many were going to end up getting vaccinated. Then you had people, not just from, you know, the layman out here or the regular you know, citizen in the United States of America being a bit reluctant to take the vaccine, but athletes themselves, pro athletes themselves. You know, it was big news when certain teams decided to get vaccinated, like the Atlanta Hawks and the New Orleans Pelicans and others, when they took the vaccine and what have you, because obviously the league couldn't force people to become vaccinated. So you got to take all of those things into consideration, and it's not just about basketball. You're absolutely right in your position. If all we're talking about is just a regular season, you know, as that's, you know, a continuation of what we've been experiencing for years and years and years, that has not been the case. This year has altered a lot of lives and a lot of businesses and a lot of professions in a myriad of ways. And because that's the reality, which is why I'm empathetic to what Mark Cuban is saying, because those guys got to go out there and play. And obviously, you don't have your health in order. Certain things have gone awry. Constantly the season has been compromised by one team or another or one player or another. It's something we've been dealing with over the last year. I understand where he's coming from.
But you know what, though? Like, everything you just said could be true. But then think about this. You know who's not complaining about the play-in tournament? You know, the Jazz, the Suns. You know, they're not complaining. You know why? Because they don't have to worry about it. You know why? Because they're, you know, doing their thing all season. You know who's not complaining about the play-in tournament? The Bulls, right? The 10th seed, the 9th seed, who would otherwise not be in the playoffs. Hey, we at least have a chance. The reason I bring that up is because it looks bad for Cuban and for Doncic to start talking about this, given the fact that they're the 7th seed, given the fact that they're headed for a play-in, and they're a very talented, excellent team, no doubt about it. So, like, why is it that they're chirping? Well, it makes them look bad.
Well, I would remind you that Luka Doncic showed up on Stephen A's World a couple of months ago, and he was an MVP candidate, and he said, "I don't deserve it. We're not playing well." So we got to take that into consideration and understand he's not an excuse maker. So let's not label him one now. He's not making excuses. Not only that, let's also point to this, Max. There has been numerous players throughout the season, even on winning teams, that have complained about how this season has been ravaged. Kevin Durant was one of them. Remember, he couldn't start one game, and then he played, and then they pulled him off in the middle of a game against the Toronto Raptors because of contact tracing, et cetera, et cetera. You look around the league, even on winning teams, you've heard individuals complaining. Now, they didn't get into the play-in tournament, but they certainly did complain about how the season has been severely compromised. As a matter of fact, there were some players on the record saying, why the hell did we even have a season with all of these question marks up in the air and the way they've got us living, staying in our hotels, not being able to go out anywhere, not being able to fraternize and socialize with the people that we love and care about, even some family members. There have been complaints. It just didn't touch on the play-in tournament because it was earlier in the season and the playoffs were not drawing near. So I don't think it's fair to say that Cuban and Doncic are complaining about sour grapes because the playoffs are approaching and they find themselves in this situation. Their complaints are consistent with what the complaints that have been circulating throughout the league since the season began.
Yeah, well, they get the game up.
We'll leave it
there,
guys.
Mavs get their game up. They won't be in a play-in tournament.
All right. Well, they're playing tonight on ESPN, 9:30 Eastern at Memphis.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast.
We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a look at Mel Kiper's latest mock draft. He had the 49ers taking Mac Jones at number 3 with the pick they acquired last month. Luis Riddick from Get Up yesterday talking about Jones. Take a listen.
Some very, very, very smart quarterback tutors and former offensive coordinators who coached at a very high level in the NFL have told me they believe Mac Jones is the best quarterback in this draft. Not just one that needs to be in the mix or that deserves to be in the mix outside of Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence, but they believe as though ultimately he's the best quarterback.
All right, Lou, today's First Take Draft Blitz takes a look at the 49ers, who will be attending Justin Fields' second pro day today, along with other teams like the Falcons and the Patriots. Jimmy G is still on the roster for the Niners, who definitely appear to be looking at the quarterback position. Max, you're up first. What should the 49ers do at quarterback?
Well, first of all, they should keep Jimmy Garoppolo, because you have a quarter, you have a team that's ready to win a Super Bowl. And you know why they didn't contend? When they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, they don't contend. When Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't play, the team doesn't win. And if he's just barely better than replacement, right? People, oh, he's okay. Then why is it so hard to replace him? When he doesn't play, they almost never win. When he plays, they almost never lose. So keep him right there because your team is ready. And maybe the next time he gets to the Super Bowl, and that could easily be this season, he doesn't miss his receiver with the game on the line. It came down to one throw. He didn't make it. Maybe next time he does. That's the first thing. The second thing is we've seen the model for quarterbacks. A lot of times you want to get them these reps in the first year. But actually the best version of how you draft and develop a quarterback recently was Patrick Mahomes. And he started one game his rookie year, right? He sat and held the clipboard and learned. And then the second year, you know, set the world on fire. So whoever they draft, they can do the same thing for Jimmy Garoppolo, who's the quarterback who gives them the best chance to win a Super Bowl right now. Now, who do they draft? I'm willing to believe Luis Riddick, Stephen A., that you're not willing to believe. Of course, I believe him. That, but I'm willing to believe the people he's talking to, that they really think Mac Jones is the best quarterback in the draft. They've studied it more than I have. And I'll say this. What Tom Brady's career has shown is, as much as I love Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes and all those, oh, my God, did you see that, things they can do, provided you have the requisite arm strength, which Mac Jones has, the number one most important aspect of a quarterback's game is decision-making. It's leadership and decision-making. How quickly can you make the decisions? How good are those decisions? Apparently, they think Mac Jones is really good and he makes them really fast. Okay, to my eye, the guy should be Justin Fields. I was reluctant even to say, wait, Zach Wilson's better than Justin? I've watched enough now. I say, yeah, I think Zach Wilson is better than Justin Fields. I don't think anyone else is. So if it were me, I'd draft hold on to Garoppolo, draft Justin Fields, maybe by the end of the season, or maybe next season, Justin Fields is the quarterback, and he's really ready to go. And meantime, you have a chance to compete for a Super Bowl this year. But Shanahan's got to take who he likes, and that may be Mac Jones. Whoever he takes, I would I would keep Garoppolo and make him the starter and give yourself the best chance to win the Super Bowl.
Well, first of all, a couple of things. Number one, I don't want to hear anything about Garoppolo's leadership. You're the quarterback. Like I told you before, I can name four levels you go to before you even get to him when you think about the San Francisco 49ers. So I don't want to hear that. Now, I will acknowledge he's 24-8 as a starter. We can't sniff at that. He's completed 67% of his passes in his career. Last year, he only played six games. He was 3-3. Okay, he was 3-3. What did he complete? He completed 67% of his passes, 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Nothing to write home about, period. When I look at Jimmy G, here's the deal. I'd say you can move on from him. And here's the reason why. You clearly have significant questions about him. You know, about 2 years ago, you gave him a deal, $137.5 million, $72 million in guarantees. Obviously, you went to a Super Bowl in the second year because he got injured his first year there. Went to the Super Bowl the second year. Yeah, he didn't get it done. So be it. That's life. But the reality of the situation is that the best ability is availability, and that hasn't been Jimmy Garoppolo. And so when you look at it from that perspective and you look at the plethora of teams out there who need a quarterback, again, I ask a similar question to what I asked the other day about Aaron Rodgers. What if you put Jimmy G on the market? What could you get for him? That's the question. And if you could get something significant for him, I'd say particularly with the Mac Jones, the Justin Fields of the world, the Trey Lances of the world available at that number three spot, expected to be available, that's something that you should entertain. Let's also remember that when we look at the San Francisco 49ers, we can point to Jimmy G all we want to. I would remind everybody about how elite this defense was when they went to the Super Bowl. I would remind everybody that last year, Nick Bosa goes down. He's out for the season. And Bruckner ended up departing, I believe it was for Indianapolis, if I remember correctly. So their defensive line was severely compromised last year. They didn't put much pressure on the passer. That compromised their defense to some degree, which still was not awful. So when I look at them and I say, excuse me, if Nick Bosa's coming back healthy, all right, and you buffer up that defensive line, who knows how elite this defense will be again, because that was their recipe for success. And Kittle was down on the offensive side of the ball, so you didn't have a reliable weapon at the tight end spot to throw the football to, and that's no longer going to be the case. There's a lot of things to point to about the 49ers that are very, very good. You combine that with Kyle Shanahan's ability to call plays. I mean, we all think Kyle Shanahan is elite. Take out his Super Bowl flops, and the man is elite, no question about it, because other than the Super Bowl, he shows up and shows out and as an offensive mind, and we like what John Lynch has assembled there as well. So I think San Francisco's in a good situation to use Jimmy Garoppolo as an asset to garner other assets in return for his services while drafting, whether it's Mac Jones, Justin Fields, or Trey Lance. I think you can pull that off if you're San Francisco.
Yep. But now you're not competing for a Super Bowl, Stephen A. And
who says?
You bring up a good point. They had a lot of injuries last year. They're going to be getting those guys back, so they could expect to do better. What something you didn't bring up, though, this is you're being slick. I don't blame you. That's you're arguing that position. Didn't get past me. If they were 3-3 with Garoppolo last year, right, and they won six games altogether. Now, I didn't major in math, but it seems to me that they were therefore 3-7 without him. 3-7 without him. They even last year, with the problems they had, they won as much as they lost with Jimmy G. Without him, they lost more than twice as much as they won. My point is this. I would agree with you if the Niners weren't in contention. But if you have Super Bowl aspirations, you're right. It's not like Garoppolo's going to take a bad team to the Super Bowl. But he's already shown he could take a good team to the Super Bowl. He could take them there with a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. He can take them there to the point where one pass wins the game. He didn't hit it. Maybe next time he does. The point is the Niners want to contend right now. Jimmy G has consistently shown, including last year, he is an enormous difference over his replacement. Why not keep him? Try to contend for the Super Bowl. You might mess around and win it. Meantime, you develop your rookie quarterback in a low-pressurized situation and then hand him the ball the year after this one. It seems to make the most sense.
Max Kellerman, do you remember what I told you about Jimmy G? You keep bringing him up, taking the team to the Super Bowl. Molly, please join in this discussion here because I'll ask a question, albeit rhetorical. I'll still take your input, Molly, because I don't want to hear from Max anymore about this. Jimmy G And the San Francisco 49ers beat the Minnesota Vikings in the postseason the year they go to the Super Bowl, 27-10. Mm-hmm. Jimmy G completed 11 of 19 passes for 131 yards. They go to the NFC Championship game. They beat Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers 37-20. Jimmy G's numbers, 6-for-8 for 77 yards. Are we really going to sit here with a straight face and say Jimmy G took them to the Super Bowl? 208 yards passing combined. Combined in the entire playoffs. And you're going to tell me he took them to the Super Bowl? Really? Really?
He got them in position. He got them there. He didn't lose the game. Isn't that part of it?
No. That's fair. It would be an issue if I'm excoriating the man, which I am not. I'm not going at porn star Jimmy like that. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm saying is Max Kellerman said he took
Disney.
Them. He's porn star Jimmy. I'm out here in L.A. I know where he was. It's porn star Jimmy. Trust me. The point that I'm trying to make to you is that in
Mickey
the playoffs against Minnesota and Green Bay in the NFC playoffs, he threw for a combined 208 yards, and Max is sitting there saying, you took him to the Super Bowl. I'm saying no.
No. Shanahan obviously wants a quarterback who he can trust to do more, right? I think that's pretty clear. They wouldn't have drafted a quarterback. And also, Jimmy G's unreliable in terms of his health. Stephen A., if that's true, that he doesn't matter, why can they not buy a win without him?
Well, I'm just saying they might win with the next quarterback.
Right?
And by the way, in that playoffs, in that one playoff game, Mostert ran for 220 yards, by the way, in that NFC Championship game. Let's not forget that.
As a rookie?
Mostert ran for 220 yards.
Super Bowl with a rookie?
In the NFC Championship game.
I think what's more concerning about Jimmy G is his health. Right? He missed games in New England. He's only played one full season with the Niners. That's more concerning, I think, than the pathetic numbers, the 77 yards. Fells, we'll leave it there. The last time the Niners drafted in the top three, that would be Alex Smith in 2005. They took him first overall. We will leave it there when we come back here on First Take. I also want to mention that tomorrow we're going to focus on the Falcons. I know Atlanta fans will want to hear this. Is it time to move on from the Matt Ryan, Julio Jones era in hot Atlanta? The fellas will debate that. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Meanwhile, the Minnesota Timberwolves honored Dante Wright before the NBA's team game on Tuesday afternoon. Wright, a 20-year-old black man, a father unarmed, was shot and killed by a police officer Sunday in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Park, just 10 miles from the Derek Chauvin trial. The Timberwolves and Nets wore special T-shirts during pregame warmups before their game and held a moment of silence on the court prior to the playing of the anthem.
At this point, you just really don't understand what's going on around here. You know, it's different stories every single day about families' lives getting altered because of police brutality. And I mean, at this point, I really don't know what to say.
In that span of about 11 months, you know, there's been no changes. There's been nothing. So like, where do we go from here? Where are the changes? And I think that's what we need to see now, because, you know, this has to stop.
Max, you weren't with us yesterday. It's inhumane, and it was absolutely preventable. What more can athletes do specifically for social justice and justice for Dante Wright and all the other Black lives lost?
Well, in this instance, when you're talking about interactions with, you know, police, you can do what you can to reform police unions who've been resistant to reform, you know, specifically in terms of these kind of fatal interactions and crimes. But I think in kind of a broader sense, when we're talking about social justice, I think what athletes can do, and it's a little, in a way, controversial because the old saying is you never want to, a sports show is like a bar. You never want to walk in and bring up politics or religion because it can divide people. And you want to have a good time. And when we're talking sports, you want to bring everyone in, right? But I think it's unavoidable in this case. Without being too specific, I guess it's unavoidable. You also have to be kind of specific here, right? What athletes can do is identify political candidates with whom they agree and support them. And more importantly, those candidates will tend to be, if we're talking about NBA athletes who want social justice, candidates who want people to vote, want more people to vote. Because in our country right now, we have a situation where the way, you know, our founding fathers framed it, we in the Senate, for example, the Senate's divided 50-50. One political party who has 50 seats represents 40 million fewer voters than the other political party. So it's already slanted, you know, to favor rural areas over urban areas, our representative government. But on top of that, because of gerrymandering, they're, you know, on a local level, it's even more slanted one way and away from the other. And on top of that, there are now laws, like in Georgia, whose intention is, whatever their advocates are claiming, the intention is, at the very least, to appease voters who were lied to about a stolen election. Wasn't stolen, they were lied to, and now they're trying to appease them. But at worst, is actually an attempt to suppress the vote of a certain group of people who vote for the other party. So I would say that, Stephen A., this has been going on. When we were little kids, we knew that what people were calling the Browning of America would take place eventually, when there were more babies who were born in this country who weren't white than there were who were white. We've come, that's already happened. And eventually, where white people would represent the plurality, meaning they're the largest group, but they're not the majority, meaning over 50%. What would we do when that moment came? And what we've seen is a party that represents, it seems to me, if you look at voting patterns, almost exclusively the white voting bloc, is trying to enact measures to ensure that our system is less democratic and less representative, so that athletes, if they're serious about reform, can identify candidates who want it to be more democratic and more representative, which means getting people to vote, as many as possible. In my view, Stephen A., that's the most effective way athletes can organize.
Before I answer this question, I wanted to read something that a guy, he's a longtime radio host. His name is Warren Ballantyne. He sent to me this morning. He sent me a text this morning. He said, "I thought it was my taser. I thought it was my apartment. I thought I saw him or her with a gun. I thought he was selling Lucy's. I thought she was there alone. I thought she was getting smart with me." Essentially, what you're talking about is the Dante Wrights, the Breonna Taylors of the world, the Eric Garners of the world. The list goes on and on. There's a whole bunch of excuses, and now we're hearing that this police officer of 26 years, who evidently couldn't tell the difference between a taser and a gun in the shooting death of Dante Wright, has at least tried to resign. According to what I'm hearing, the mayor is not trying to accept that resignation, because apparently by resigning, you know, obviously it puts in a position to collect a pension. I don't know how true that is, but those are the kind of things that are being said. Having said that, to answer the question directly, when we talk about what athletes can do, how about athletes pooling their resources? And you know, creating a legal defense fund. So when cases like this prop up, black individuals can afford to hire the best lawyers to sue some of these cities with civil suits. Because if you're worried about what's going to transpire, if you're worried about the repercussions and the ramifications even more significantly, perhaps it will give you cause to pause. This is the bottom line with these athletes, and this is what I've been saying for a long time. Kevin Durant is en route to becoming a billionaire. LeBron James might already be there. Steph Curry may get there. We heard Russell Westbrook allude to generational wealth a couple of weeks ago, although he was talking about something far more innocuous than this because he was talking about, you know, responding to something that I had said. We saw Kyrie Irving on numerous occasions bring to our attention the kind of things that ail our community and the kind of things he himself, who has put his money where his mouth is on several occasions to generate revenue for causes that are near and dear to his heart, and he should be commended and applauded for that. Think about the resources that athletes collectively have available to them. And think about the impact that that could have if you did what Max Kellerman just suggested, identifying political candidates you support and obviously doing what you can to manipulate things from a legislative perspective on Capitol Hill. I'd encourage everybody to watch yesterday's First Take with political commentator extraordinaire Angela Rye and some of the things that she suggested, because she was clearly on point as well. But I also think it's important to point this out, Max Kellerman. I despise when people just march lockstep with parties, because I don't trust any of them. And my whole point is, whether it's a house, a car, or anything else, what you do is you go about the business of saying, show me what you got. Sell me on your point. What is it that you want me to buy that you're selling? Convince me. You understand what I'm saying? You know, do what you can. Coax me. Show me what you got. I think that athletes can put the black community in a position where we can force individuals with legislative powers to say, convince me. If you sit up there and you're very transparent in your support of one party over another, that party has a license to take you for granted, and the other party has a license to shove you aside because they believe they're not going to get your vote anyway. And as a result, you find yourself underrepresented. So I think that the political game that these people play on Capitol Hill, the same political game that these athletes have surrounded themselves with the right people and they're smart enough to generate revenue for themselves by playing a political game and being corporate, I think that same mentality is something that you could take to Capitol Hill to manipulate proceedings in your favor a little bit more. Just don't be transparent. Make sure they have to sell you on what they're trying to do in order to maintain their position. And I think that goes a good long point. Way towards making things happen.
I think it's a good point, not being taken for granted in a two-party system where, you know, I understand that point. I just want to say quickly, Stephen A., Molly, LeBron James has the right idea. Mm-hmm. Everything that I said just leads to the point where vote. Get people out to vote. And then you'll see, you know, you can make your own determinations. Is there a party out there that's trying to suppress the vote, that's anti-majoritarian, right? Is there a party that wants more democracy? Get out and vote, because black political power has been systematically undermined in this country, even post-slavery. That's what Reconstruction was about, taking away the black vote. LeBron James has the right idea.
We've also undermined ourselves by being a bit too transparent at times. We need to play the game better.
All right, I'll leave you with this. Dante Wright should be alive, and his life mattered. And also another issue that's close to my heart, that I want to mention while we're on the subjects, is black women are also facing a maternal mortality crisis. And if you're unaware of that, educate yourself and look at the figures and numbers and the alarming rate that they're dying during pregnancy compared to women of other ethnicities.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.